The nonprofits, says Derrida in promoting his use of post-structuralist capitalist theory. However, Lou Bay's contextualized mythopoetical discourse, along with that of Dillahunty's intrinsically unattainable textual paradigm, modified by Schilling's narrativity and Glasser's sonagist leanings, you have, in a sense, pure cultural post-discourse. The characteristic theme of Humphrey's essay on narrativity as paradox explains that we're broadcasting live on the 29th of March in the year 2008 from, as Sartre would denote, the Dillahunty International Studios in Austin, Texas. But as Gaiman points out in Socialism in the Works of Joyce, we're actually listening to Terrible Lie by Nine Inch Nails. The nonprofits is sponsored by the atheist community of Austin, says Lyotard. However, according to Tilton, it is not so much that class is fundamentally impossible, but rather that the ACA is a nonprofit organization, not only in the light of meaninglessness and hence the failure of class, but also in the sense that it promotes positive atheism and the separation of church and state. And so Joyce is not as coy in directing us towards the contextual totality of the ACA voicemail at 512-371-2911 or asking us to take part in a cultural deconstruction by visiting the website at www.atheist-community.org. Sexual identity is intrinsically a legal fiction, says Mark. However, according to Pickett, it is not so much sexual identity that is intrinsically a legal fiction, but rather the ACA happy hour held at the Dog and Duck at 7 o'clock on Thursdays here in Austin, Texas. It could be said that if socialism holds, we have to choose between neo-dialectic patriarchalist theory and the idea that the nonprofits broadcasts live every other Saturday from 2 to 3:30. That suggests the subject is contextualized into a model that includes narrativity as a paradox. However, the textual paradigm of discourse holds that narrative must come from the collective unconscious, given that Derrida's theory that we can participate in the show via the chat room by following the directions found at www.nonprofitsradio.com is valid. The characteristic theme of the works of Joyce is the meaninglessness and therefore the absurdity of pre-dialectic sexual identity. However, the subject is contextualized into a paradigm that includes reality as a totality. So there.
Well done.
You know, as I listened to your discourse,
yes,
I was reminded of the words of... No, actually, I wasn't.
You weren't?
That's the whole point.
But it didn't remind you of anyone?
No, it's the whole point of, you know, and I thought it was bloody brilliant. But it's the whole point of why I do what I do and why we try to do what we do, which is just have a conversation.
Mine was devoid of meaning.
You know, I got a critical email this week of somebody who had watched the show. This woman had called into the TV show, and basically she had done this just absurd, the Bible's true because it's the word of God, and I know it's the word of God because it says so in the Bible. And as soon as I said, so you're saying you believe the Bible's true because the Bible says it's true, then she was realized her mistake and was like, no, I also have... You know, experience. So we go on in this little discussion about experience, and eventually I ended up hanging up on her because, you know, she didn't want to do anything but preach about what Jesus had to say. And I said, I don't give a damn what Jesus had to say. I'm asking why you think this stuff is true. I know you believe it's true, and I already know what it says. Spent years in that gully. And so I get an email from somebody saying that I was, you know, I was a bully. And that I was talking over their heads. And if there's anything that I try to do on both shows is not talk over anybody's head. And I'm not even sure I'm capable of talking over, you know, our listeners' heads for sure, at least not the regular ones. But
you need to use words like contextualize. Well, see, then you'd be talking over their heads.
That 11-minute clip that made it up on YouTube, one of the big arguments, and then this is when I stopped reading any responses and I decided I don't care what anybody has to say about the clip. Well, somebody came on and said, he just makes up a bunch of words at the beginning of it and then doesn't say what words I made up, even when asked a couple times. So they went back and dug through it. And the only words that might have not been part of everyday parlance would have been epistemology and heuristic.
Mm.
Those are the only two words that, you know,
parlance.
Just to be snotty.
Wow.
So, yeah, and somebody said, no, he didn't make those words up. Somebody else did quite a while ago, and that's why they actually have some fucking meaning. So, I loved it.
So, what does heuristic mean?
Heuristic is an algorithm. It's a process by which you analyze a situation.
Oh, okay. So, the scientific method would be a heuristic.
Yes,
cool.
Depending on how narrowly you want to define that.
All right.
But what I was talking about in that particular case was the heuristic model we use in our brains whenever we analyze any claim to determine whether or not it's believable.
Right.
It can happen really fast. It can be flawed. It may or may not produce reliable results. But there is some model that we follow when analyzing every claim.
Theists have a really simple one. The Bible says it. It's true.
Yeah. Welcome. Also, we'd like to welcome the agnostic listeners back.
Well, not all of them.
We didn't get a flood of mail. We got one.
No, we got one objection, and that's enough for me to take. I swear, for those of you listening who are fine with all of this, this is literally only going to take maybe 30 seconds. The rant last week about agnostics was, I thought, clear that it was not about all agnostics, that I'm only targeting. Basically, my objection is to anybody who mischaracterizes atheism in order to bolster their own position. And I don't care if they're an apologist like Ray Comfort or a snotty intellectual who wants to use the agnostic label and say that atheism is this unreasonable, unjustified position. Those are the only asshats I'm talking about.
Right. The ones that keep trying to say that atheists are just as fundamentalist as theists.
Yeah. So all you people out there who prefer an agnostic label for whatever reason. I'm not talking about you. I appreciate those people, and I actually understand it. This middle ground between theism and anti-theism, I can understand that. But there is no middle ground between theism and atheism, and that was the whole point. But so there's my 30-second clarification, and if any, we did get a mail about it, but and I responded, and there was a back and forth, and I'm not going to bore everybody with that. It doesn't matter. It's not like it almost came across as, Matt's decided that agnosticism is an intellectually unjustified position, and now he's going to rip into them, even though they're by and large on the same side. And that's not the case at all.
Right. Now, is there any ACA business or anything like that?
Oh, no.
No.
Yeah,
okay.
Actually, there is.
There is.
There's always ACA business. Lecture coming up next Sunday, April 6th, and I've forgotten the guy's name, but I should have had it in front of me. I apologize. He's a geologist who's going to come in and talk about how the geological evidence relates to the climate change model.
Ooh, neat. All right.
For those who have been waiting for the black body radiation lecture, It's postponed indefinitely for circumstances beyond everybody's control, but Mark still wants to do it. We still want to get him in. It's that Don Rhodes is doing such a phenomenal job putting together lecturers that part of the problem is that as soon as Mark couldn't do his, he found a substitute, and he has booked all of these other lectures. And so it wouldn't be right to bump any of them for Mark. So I'm hoping that'll happen. I'm also putting together a new lecture. It's not any kind of rush job, and it doesn't have to happen anytime soon, but I'm probably thinking maybe around late fallish I might do that, because there's a chance that I'll be going out to that I'll be traveling to actually speak at least one school, maybe. We've had a listener write in saying that might be a good idea for the fall semester, and I'm willing to go along with it, and so I want to have a few things to pick from if that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't, all right, great. Because I'm, for those who are wondering and didn't hear about it last week, I'm actually working again.
Yay!
But it's a contract position with the possibility of full-time, so I'm working 10, 11-hour days, and coming home and sleeping and getting back up.
Make yourself absolutely essential.
Yeah, and if it weren't, and if this show were still being done, over at Mary's and everybody else was still involved, I probably would have taken today off. But since we do it here, I'm here.
It's also worth pointing out that we're doing membership renewal as well.
Membership renewal is in full effect. March is the beginning. And you need it, if you're an ACA member, that's something you're going to want to take care of because the elections are coming up in May. And we'll have more information about that once we get a little closer and make the announcements. The usual happy hour lecture. Actually, happy hour has been going great. It's consistently our best attended event.
Right. We're right now, I'd say in the last month or two, we're averaging about 20.
Yeah. Hmm. Which, you know, for a Thursday night, which is technically kind of midweek, you know, for people to come down around 7 o'clock, and I don't know when everybody left the other night, but, I mean, I think normally it starts to peter out close to 10:30, 11 o'clock, maybe a little later.
Right.
It's when the majority of people bail. I mean, people got to go to work, and yet we're still getting good turnout.
Cool.
And visitors.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And that does seem to be the event that attracts the most new people at the moment.
Yeah.
The happy hour.
Yeah. And it's kind of laid back. And it's one of those things where people ask, you know, what's the purpose of the ACA? Why, you know, if you guys don't believe in a God, why would you get together? Why this kind of seems kind of churchy? And the thing that I keep pointing out is that we're social creatures, and fellowship is something that we generally appreciate. The fact that church has glommed onto this fellowship model doesn't mean nobody else can. The ACA exists for two purposes. One is to support church-state separation issues, and the other is to support atheists in the Austin area. The fact that our voice ends up going out, you know, around the world is kind of an added bonus. And we love getting feedback. There are groups forming. There are, you know, people saying, hey, you know, plug my blog, and I'll have to look. I've got an email somebody asking to do that. Plug this blog, plug this group. We're trying to get this going. And I think it's great. And, it's, you know, some of them are using ACA as a model. But the primary focus is here in Austin. And one of the best ways to support the atheist community of Austin is to provide a place where anybody who's atheist or atheist-friendly can come and hang out and not feel like an outsider. Because we hear all the time, oh, I didn't even know there was an atheist group. I thought I was the only one in Austin. All my friends are Christian. I'm so tired of hearing about the religious stuff.
They all feel alone.
Yeah. I can't even go to work parties because eventually these subjects come up, and I can't just say, you know, oh, that's hooey, or I don't agree with that, because these subjects generally aren't open to discussion. I mean, we can have a big debate on, you know, Republican, Democrat, conservative, liberal. We can have abortion debates and death sentence debates. As soon as somebody says, this is my religious belief, we have a hands-off culture.
Yep.
Not for me. actually, I did something that I wouldn't normally have done, but I was in a particularly good mood. Yesterday morning, I went into work, and the security guard at the front desk that checks my badge and everything was being all friendly, and we were talking, and she says, thank God it's Friday. And I said, I'm an atheist, but I'll say an amen to that. I'm so happy that today is Friday. And she got this nervous smile.
Uh-huh.
And then I made a second comment that was like, you know, weekends can't come fast enough, or, you know, we can all enjoy a weekend. And you could see that there was something that changed on her face. The atheist word triggered something.
Yeah.
And then her mind went and said, oh, but he's really nice and friendly, and we're agreeing about this. And then everything kind of went back to normal. Cool. Well, I don't know.
That increasingly, I think it's going to get a lot better. Just in the past 6 to 8 months, I've just noticed a lot more people seem to be aware enough that if they say something like God bless or thank God or or I had a guy this week, a couple days ago on Thursday, ask me how Easter weekend went. And then he corrected himself, oh, the weekend of of the – and, you know, they
– Right.
And some of these people know I'm atheist. Some of them don't. But when you mention the atheism, they get that cringe, like they think you're going to be furious. How dare you, you know, thank God or something like that. When that doesn't happen, there's this weird relief. So they're already aware of atheism and just non-Christian religion. So they're starting to change their language and brace for attack. And when that attack doesn't come, I think that's really going to open them up to using maybe altered language, but not viewing atheists as these people who will harp on them for religious sentiment or epithet.
It's the whole reason I brought it up, because honestly, despite having done the show for a number of years and being open in conversation, it's the first time I've ever done that. Somebody I do not know says something, you know.
Right.
Thank God it's Friday or whatever. And I immediately, in a lighthearted way, let them know that I'm an atheist. And, oh, by the way, I can share the sentiment that you really mean. You're not really thanking God that it's Friday, because you knew yesterday today was going to be Friday. and God didn't
it's
set
kind of
your,
inevitable.
God didn't set your work schedule either. So you're not really thanking God. You're just tossing out this religious phrase that's ultimately become meaningless and pointless.
Well, if you're going to think of God for it, you'd have to go back a bit farther to the gods for whom the days are named.
Yes.
Yes, thank God it's Freya's Day.
Thank Thor it's Thor's Day.
Speaking of plugs, though, of groups, Atheist Longhorns last week had their first meeting post-Dawkins lecture and had a great turnout, and they're getting nothing but just tremendous response from it.
Cool.
So it's really going to help that group out. It'll help out ACA. It'll just do great things for the atmosphere here.
Well, congratulations. So,
uncomfortable silence.
I think I've got some news.
Cool. Go with the news. I'm
a little
gonna look,
bit.
Look for that.
This is a little light news here. The blogosphere was all abuzz with P.Z. Myers and Richard Dawkins and the Expelled movie. And as a result of this stuff, I think PZ's blog was like the fourth most popular in the world or something like that. Is that page was hit so
it wasn't already?
It was amazing.
It's my most popular blog.
But anyway, and recently, apparently, in his words here, some of you know that the producers of Expelled had a conference call this afternoon, a carefully controlled, closed environment in which they could spout their nonsense and only take questions by email. I listened to it for a while, and yeah, it was the usual runaround. However, I dialed in a few minutes early, and I got to listen to a tiresome 5 minutes of Leslie and Paul chatting away, during which time they mentioned the secret code, dun-dun-dun, and he actually writes it down, D-U-N-D-U-N, for the two-way calls. I know, sloppy, unprofessional, and stupid, but that's the way they work. So I redialed, dun-dun-dun, and I listened along quietly until I could take no more. And he describes about, you know, the softball questions and all the stuff they were asked. And let's see, finally he had to break in. When they started bringing in the Nazi connection with, you know, trying to say that Nazism is a direct result of Darwinism. And PZ says, so I interrupted. I said, in essence, hang on, you guys are spinning out a lot of lies here. You should be called on it. I gave a quick gloss on it and said that, for instance, anti-Semitism has a long history in Germany that preceded Darwin, and that they ought to look up the word pogrom. There was some mad rustling and flustering about on the other side of the phone, some complaints, etc., and then one of them asked me to do the honorable thing and hang up. So I said, yes, I would do the honorable thing and hang up, while they continued the dishonorable thing and continued to lie. And so he gave his email address to the reporters in case they wanted to contact him later. And apparently he had some emails by the time he logged off.
Oh, he gets some email.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to go off my own little rant here.
Good.
I am sick to death of the Hitler, Stalin, Mao, and Pol Pot argument. The problem with it, despite being a fallacious emotional appeal, is that any attempt to counter it with the facts loses your audience. The moment you attempt to explain why those monsters didn't do what they did because of their atheism, you can watch the eyes of your audience glaze over. The theist brought up a clear and easy point. Let's compare numbers. The audience doesn't want to hear speculations as to the motives of dead guys. They want numbers. So fuck it. Let's give them numbers. Say you'll grant the absurd notion that they did it because they were evil secularists, just for the sake of argument. Then tell them that the death toll from the evil secularists in the 20th century is negative 1 billion.
Yeah, Hitler and Stalin and the rest killed maybe 100 million people, tops. But a single scientist by the name of Norman Borlaug, using the same secular scientific method as Darwin, is credited with having saved the lives of 1 billion people. That's a Carl Sagan billion with a B. That's 1 in 6 people on the face of the earth, each owing their lives to this one guy. And all he did was start the Green Revolution, tripling and quadrupling harvests in places like India and Africa. Add to that the secular medical advances that wiped out smallpox, which killed 300 million people in the 20th century alone, and you find that Hitler and that crew are a blip. Now, tell me the name of the Pope that saved the lives of a billion people. So this response also has the advantage of starkly demonstrating the value of secular science as opposed to the worthlessness of religion.
Well, the Pope was too busy being Hitler Youth,
yes,
following the
good
evil
point.
Secularists.
Yeah. Shaking hands with Hitler. Yep.
It's I've yet to see a single example of someone who pulls out that argument able to understand, excluding Hitler, because the claim that Hitler was an atheist is just preposterous.
Mm-hmm.
But with someone like Stalin or Pol Pot, I've yet to see any of them be able to grasp that you can do something while being an atheist that's not in the name of atheism.
Right.
And it's such a simple point. You think occasionally you would see someone change their mind
yeah.
and be convinced. And
people compare it to mustaches.
Seen, yeah.
You know, Stalin had a mustache. Does that mean everyone with a mustache is an evil monster?
Yeah, there's something about when you're trying to determine what the cause of anything is, there's this idea of demonstrating that it's necessary and sufficient.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, I don't think atheism is either to the atrocities that are attributed to it falsely by these creations. Like, if you're talking about what's necessary and sufficient, like, what is the cause of fire? The standard fire triangle has 3 sides. It's oxygen, fuel, and heat. None of those are the cause. They're all necessary. Not each one of them is insufficient.
Right.
It's the union of those three that makes that becomes a new cause. That's the union is the cause, and that makes
analogy.
It necessary and sufficient. And so what we then do, when we're trying to find out what is the cause of perhaps one event, we can trace back through causes to find the furthest cause back we can identify
mm-hmm.
that is both necessary and sufficient.
Right.
And we do this when somebody's trying to make a case in court that this guy burned down somebody else's house. We don't have to do the Friar Triangle and then show that, you know, he was the one who created the union. We know that. He's the one who created this union to cause the fire. And he took steps with intent. His action was both necessary and sufficient. But there's a subtle, you know, when we're talking about what's the intent here, there's like a subtle difference. And that is, let's say I absolutely, completely despise Ray Comfort.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case, by the way. And Ray, if you're listening, you're welcome to come down to Texas and debate me, probably at the UT campus. I think we may actually be able to arrange that.
Oh, battle. Yeah.
But so let's say I absolutely despise him. And I'm backing my car out of the driveway one day, and I run over him and kill him. Now, my action, pulling the car out and running over him, both necessary and sufficient to cause his death. But the fact that I despised him and even wanted him dead, while it's sufficient, was not a necessary component of that. It was completely incidental. So you can have something that's sufficient and not necessary.
Right.
You can have something that's necessary and not sufficient. It's the union. This is how we'd identify causes. Determining intent kind of goes off to a, you know,
right,
a tangent
right.
there. But
when,
yeah, but there's a certain amount of speculation involved.
With Stalin, which is the only one that they can even try to attempt to support because he made huge efforts to crush the church. And they see that as an attack on religion.
Right.
And it absolutely wasn't. And anyone who says that is completely ignorant of the political climate at the time. He was attacking any group of power to influence. They were attacking all other political parties, and they were attacking the organized church.
Because he was attacking his competition.
Right. It's not like there were an array of churches. There was a religious stranglehold.
Mm-hmm.
And it had a huge power and influence and abused the shit out of it.
Yes.
And especially if you hear these types of arguments from Protestants, which you tend to. It tends to be mm-hmm. evangelicals. Point out that the way they feel about the Pope and the Vatican, that's not God's church. That's just an institution out for political gain. That's exactly what the church was in Russia at the time that it was right. that Stalin was trying to stomp it out.
But I actually go a step further. Even if Stalin was opposed to the church and his goal was to destroy the church, you can't draw a causal chain
right.
from that ends up with atheism as both necessary and sufficient.
Right.
When in the 50s, when McCarthyism ruled the American, I don't know, thinking and media and everything else, yeah. and we injected Under God into the pledge and In God We Trust onto all of our bills, we were in an ideological war with godless communists. And rather than focusing on what the problem was, which was the communist part, the assertion of particular dogma, not just the failings of the social economic system, but the dogma being asserted by communists.
Right.
That was the problem part. It wasn't the godless part. So instead, they focused on the godless part and then made us the godly Americans. They created, they targeted the wrong element of the problem. And perhaps, while fully comprehending and talking about it in public, that communism was a problem. The problem is that they linked communism and atheism in this intertwined kind of fusion of language where they meant the same thing, and they have nothing at all to do with each other. Atheism has no tenets, no dogma. It cannot instruct any action, good or evil. And I've heard this kind of misrepresented lately listening to some other people, other atheists as well, where they would, they say atheism can't possibly lead to you doing evil things. They're right, but be completely honest and make sure that you're explaining the point. Atheism can't lead you to good or evil actions, any action. There's no way to draw a causal chain right. from I don't believe in God to therefore I should do X. The best you could come up with is that atheism might be a necessary factor for some actions later, but I don't see it as sufficient. And honestly, I don't see it as necessary or sufficient, because there's not a single action that they've identified and linked with atheism that couldn't also have been done by somebody who was religious, just of a different religion.
Right.
I mean, the religious disputes happen all the time.
Yeah, but then they'd compare us to religion. So it's like
seemingly that. Without end, they happen.
Right. Now, the one of the problems with this bringing in Norman Borlaug to the argument and saying,
who may be the greatest human who's ever lived.
Yes, he's got a Nobel Prize and a Congressional Medal of Honor and saved the lives of a billion people. Pretty good. From starvation. But I spent like a good 2 hours online trying to figure out, okay, what's his religious affiliation, if any?
Yeah.
And I found nothing. Nada. Zippo. He holds the cards really close to the chest. So I have to soften the argument somewhat and say secularists rather than atheists, because his science is secular.
Yeah.
I mean, he's using the scientific method. He's not saying God made this wheat for me to use or this rice that saved these lives. No, he did it scientifically.
Well, at the very least,
that's
his work
and
his public persona
uh-huh.
are atheist, even if he's not yeah. atheist, his work and his persona are atheist simply because there is no mention to deity.
Right. Yeah, I never heard him, I don't have his speech. I guess we should maybe find his speech that he gave about the Nobel Prize. Mm-hmm. But, if you can't find the information, there are some things we can determine.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but
it's not like it's hard to figure out what Fred Phelps's religion is,
right.
or Pat Robertson or anybody else. As a matter of fact, it's not hard to figure out what the presidential candidates' religions are either. Most of the time, it's not any famous, significant individual. It's probably not too hard to find out what their religion is or what their religious beliefs are. And when it is hard, it usually means that they haven't ever discussed it, which means it's
right.
a private issue. It's
Seems
not for
to be.
Public. They have just, you know, could just as easily be atheist or, you know,
mm-hmm.
Raelians, for all I know.
So anyway, I thought, okay, they want numbers, give them numbers, was an interesting approach that I hadn't heard used before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, it's basically, you know, they're complaining that secularists are so evil. Well, you know, you're still alive. You're not dead from smallpox. You're, you know, you haven't starved to death.
Not only that, but, you know.
You know, what have the Romans ever done for us? It's basically that argument, you know.
Well, the roads? Well, yes.
Besides the roads, yes.
Education?
Well, yes, of course.
I wish we'd have known. I could have had that bit ready to play. It's one of my favorite bits from Life of Brian.
Yeah. So, got...
How about some dead children?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you want to get into that one? Do you want to read this one?
No, you keep going.
Okay.
You're doing... not. Somebody already said right off the top, as soon as you started with your intro,
yep.
that yours was their favorite voice.
Okay.
So.
Well, girl dies after parents pray for healing instead of seeking medical help. Now, I know, I think this has been all over the news now, so everybody's probably sick of hearing about it, but I
got
to do it one more time here.
I think I got 45 emails on this particular
oh my
story.
God. Girl dies after parents pray for healing instead of seeking medical help. Weston, Wisconsin, an 11-year-old girl died after her parents prayed for healing rather than seek medical help for a treatable form of diabetes, police said Tuesday. Everest Metro Police Chief Van Vergen said Madeline Newman died Sunday. She got sicker and sicker until she was dead, he said. Vergen said an autopsy determined the girl died from diabetic ketoacidosis.
That's correct.
An ailment that left her with too little insulin in her body, and she had probably been ill for about 30 days, suffering symptoms like nausea, vomiting, excessive thirst, loss of appetite, and weakness. The girl's parents, Dale and Leilani Newman, attributed death to apparently they didn't have enough faith, the police chief said.
Now, for those listeners, and I realize we have people listening all over the place, and we've discussed a number of times on the show profanity and its use and whether
mm-hmm.
or not it's viable. And I know some people let their kids listen and would prefer that we didn't use a lot of profanity. You might want to pause or stop or skip
or
ahead.
Or stick your fingers in their ears.
Several minutes. Because I'm even having difficulty summoning up words that aren't profane.
Yes, yes. Yeah, apparently the parents believed the key to healing was it was better to keep praying. Call more people to help pray.
You stupid fucking assholes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this would almost be a good argument for, like, natural selection at work. Let's let those religious idiots kill themselves off with shit
right.
like this. But we're talking about a child. Now, I realize that we let parents have all kinds of rights and liberties with regard to their parents. Children are, in the United States, for the most part, property. And until you actually show that you've done really, you know, significant damage to that property, nobody's going to come in and swoop and take them
right.
away. You fucking killed your daughter. This is a treatable illness that would have been simple. Nowadays, you know, diabetes with insulin injections, this is many people's everyday life is
right.
Oh, time for my insulin shot. This is nothing.
Yeah. Now, someone on the, I was watching a news report and they had a pro and con thing, you know, that should they be indicted? Or should they not be indicted? And the guy saying that, you know, oh, we should, you know, not indict them was going on about, no, their crime is not murder. Their crime is ignorance. And so and it's like, well, yeah, you could make that argument, but they have to be willfully ignorant in such a way that it's murderous.
You could say that it's ignorance. And if I take Dennis out in front of the apartment here and I hoist a piano up on a fucking line and let it go and claim that I just didn't know it was going to kill him when it smashed his head. Okay, it's ignorance, and it's ignorance like that.
Yeah.
It's murder.
What I appreciate about the timing of it is it comes right after that ridiculous story about the woman who was barricaded in the bathroom for so long.
What's and that one?
Yeah, that her ass grew to the
toilet. She was there for like 2 years or something.
What?
She spent 2 years in the bathroom. After a couple years, her boyfriend, who had been bringing her food and shit, he finally decided it was time to call someone. So the fire department came and cut her out of the house, and they had to remove the seat because she had grown to it. And surgically remove the seat later.
Whoa!
So this is an adult.
This is the first I've heard of this insanity.
Yeah, this is an adult woman.
Yeah.
Who made a decision, and aside from a great deal of embarrassment and some mental issues, she's fine. She just had to have it surgically removed. She'll be okay. Oh, he's being prosecuted to the full extent of the law.
Yeah.
And how anyone. And, you know, I haven't heard anyone say he shouldn't be prosecuted.
Right.
You know, everyone's like, yes, 2 years, you didn't call anybody, he's guilty. But this story is far more extreme, and it's the same thing. It's them refusing to help someone in a bad situation.
Well, the situation is completely different. An adult making a decision
That's how it's far more extreme.
Completely different from a child who's a prisoner of the parents.
You have people with a direct obligation to the one they're harming. You have the one they're harming being a minor, and you have it being of far more severity, and they know exactly the fuck how to handle it.
Yeah.
You know, someone barricades himself in a bathroom, I could see how you might wonder exactly how to go about it. But fucking diabetes.
There is no way. This goes right back to the, to what we were talking about a minute ago. There is absolutely no way you can draw a line from disbelief to something this fucking stupid.
Well,
no, there's no way to justify an action that harms a child just because you don't believe.
Well, they're so stupid. The mother believes the girl could still be resurrected, the police chief said.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't have
that kind of idiocy is.
And I think we should prove it by crucifying the parents.
Yeah.
They didn't take their other kids away.
I know.
Because they decided that there was no danger to them.
Right.
Until they get sick.
Until they get sick. And as soon as they get sick, then they're in danger.
The parents told the investigators their daughter last saw a doctor when she was 3 to get some shots. The girl had attended public school during the first semester, but didn't return for the second semester. She was being homeschooled. Yeah. So it's like 11-year-old hadn't seen a doctor since she was 3. These
I'm not
are
even
neglect.
Going down.
This is criminal neglect.
But going on what you said, where are the atheist parents who have a diabetic kid and say, we're not going to treat him with insulin. We're going to wait for science to come up with a cure.
Where are the atheist parents that pile their kids in a car and drive it into a lake?
Yeah.
Where are the atheist? I don't hear these stories.
There are no atheist parents who cut off their kids' arms. There are no atheist parents who refuse medical treatment, hoping for some magical solution. There are no atheist suicide bombers who fly planes into buildings.
And you know, the reason we know that is because if there were, boy, would we hear about it.
You bet. If your best argument against what's wrong with atheism is that it's barking out and objecting to stuff like this, you've already lost. Because only somebody who is inhuman, who has no Schilling, who I love to death, is about as misanthropic as you can get. And even he recognizes that this is a tragedy.
Yeah.
That this is an exercise in stupidity.
Well,
right?
I don't know that I would go as far as
tragedy. I know. Fucking go with me for a second.
I'm sure that she would have grown up to be just like them, so
yes.
I look at it as
let's
a wash.
And that's the difference, is I'm not sure that she would have.
Yeah.
Because people can change.
That's speculative.
People can break away from their beliefs. And just because that you've been in this type of situation doesn't mean that you have to repeat the mistakes of your parents.
Now, I was talking
just
about
makes it
this.
Harder to get out.
I was talking about this story with Jeff. And he was noticing something in the news reports on TV, like CNN or Fox News.
Right.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about it.
The reporter or the anchor person would make a point of saying that this family didn't belong to an organized religion. And in fact, this story says the family does not attend an organized church or participate in an organized religion. They have a little Bible study of a few people. And they bring that up, and Jeff suspects it's to insulate organized religion from this kind of crap.
Potentially. I see where some of its inclusion could have that as a motive.
And I think that might
also
be a lot of it.
It's mentioned as also entirely appropriate, because if you mention something like this where they were praying, they believed in God, anytime these types of things happen, they do mention what church they go to.
Mm-hmm.
When you see the, you know, the kid with epilepsy who gets killed in an exorcism, they mention what church they go to. And especially something like that where it has direct ties, like off the bat, intuitively, you suspect Christian Scientists. So it should be included. It's just a matter of whether their motives are the decent motives of journalistic integrity or doing the, well, it's not us, it's them.
Yeah. I'm absolutely fine with him including the fact that these parents weren't part of an organized religion or any kind of particular denomination. As long as it's true, it's fact, and I have no problem at all with it. And by the way, it doesn't excuse me at all from saying this is the exact same shit that Christian Scientists do all the time. I don't care if they went to a Christian Science church or not. You Christian Scientists are advocating the same stupidity, and they're not the only ones. And I think it's fine. Say that they didn't go to any church, and it's fair. But, you know, it would have been nice in the next breath to say that while they weren't attending any church, these views are expressed by a number of different denominations, including Christian Scientists who refuse blood transfusions and medical treatment, et cetera, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
That's some commentary that actually shows people that this isn't some outlying
fringe,
I mean, granted, okay, it is a fringe, but and so is Christian Scientists. Not all Christians are so moronic as to do this. It is a fringe, but it's still representative of a significant portion
and
of
you
population.
Can definitely say that this is where faith and dogma gets you.
So congratulations. I'd like to congratulate the parents on killing their daughter. To borrow a sentiment from Schilling, you may have saved her from becoming ignorant, immoral pricks like yourselves.
But there's a chance she could have escaped.
On the other hand, you cost yourself a daughter, and who knows, maybe she would have been the one who'd come up with a cure for cancer. Maybe she'd have grown up in this environment where she was denied medical treatment and rebelled against it and decided to learn everything that she could about medical science and come up with cures for all of us. I guess it doesn't really matter to you, since you wouldn't take those cures either. You are evil. The religion you adhere to is evil. It is ignorant. It is promoting ignorance. It's willful, voluntary. It is living and loving ignorance. It is a celebration of ignorance. And all it does is breed more ignorance and kill people. That's it. You don't get any real positive. Oh, I felt good. I felt the Holy Spirit touch me. My day is so much better. What? This fear and stupidity that is probably the biggest underlying cause of religion in the first place. And I'm going to have to dig up a comment from yesterday because this has made its appearance. No, I don't. I remember it well enough. This has made its appearance on our message boards as well, where somebody shows up to say, hey, I just want to know what you atheists believe. And then we get into a discussion and she ends up explaining what she believes and why. And we represent our objections to it. And then she says, well, I just can't believe in a world where there's not some ultimate sense of justice. This becomes eventually her primary justification for believing in God. I actually am going to dig it up. And so go ahead with the next thing because I don't want to miss it.
Oh man. I don't know if I've got a next thing.
There's the sentencing.
Sentence the church. Yeah.
Which is in a certain sense more egregious. Because it's
illegal.
Well, there's that. But also,
it's
this guy
precedent.
Has harmed far more people.
Yeah. With a lengthy and violent criminal record to his name, Pacino Hill is going to church. Hill, 29, of Davenport, was sentenced Wednesday by Scott County Associate Judge Christine Dalton to a counseling program offered by Third Missionary Baptist Church. She also ordered him to attend church where ordered him to attend church there 8 consecutive Sundays, to pay a fine, and to be on probation for 1 year. If he doesn't comply, he faces up to 2 years in prison for eluding and driving while barred. The charges are the result of a police chase from Rock Island to Davenport in October. "Let's give it a shot," said Dalton, said of the counseling program plan presented to her by Hill's attorney, Brenda Drew Peoples, and supported by Roger Kirk, a pastor at Third Missionary. "I'm all about one more chance."
I don't know how this happened. This has already been ruled unconstitutional.
Yeah, you'd think.
Just so everybody knows, I forget exactly where. I've run across it several times. So look up the news story. And in the comments, there's a group of people who are going around and they are posting the contact information for that judge and the district judge above her.
Yeah.
So, you know, for email, phone calls, letters, everything, letting them know how fucking stupid this is.
Hey, where are all the Christians complaining about this judge legislating from the bench? Because she's inventing not only a process that's illegal, but something that's already been determined to be unconstitutional.
Right.
You can't even sentence somebody to Alcoholics Anonymous, because Alcoholics Anonymous, guess what, is religious, no matter how much any of them try to deny it. And so all you can do is sentence them to treatment. They can either go to Alcoholics Anonymous, blah, or a secular alternative in their number.
Right.
You know, secular sobriety.
So this guy gets to go to church and be on probation for a year, but you know, his record includes things like Hill was charged when he was 14 years old with first-degree murder in connection with the shooting death of Lawrence Brown Johnson.
I'm surprised we know that. That should probably be sealed. 14, juvie records usually sealed.
It depends on the state, but at 14 you can be tried as an adult for some crimes in some states, so that might not have been sealed.
Yeah. Apparently, it didn't go to trial.
Oh, well, if this was an out-of-court settlement... Oh, no, the murder didn't go to trial, you're saying?
Right,
okay.
Apparently.
Yeah, I was going to say, if it didn't go to
trial...
In
December 2002, Hill was one of 3 men charged with attempted murder for allegedly shooting a Davenport police officer. Okay. One of those bullets missed the head of Captain Dennis Colclasure by 6 inches, police investigators said.
If only it were illegal to be stupid... We could take care of those parents that killed their daughter and this judge.
Where are the fucking Shakers?
Lock them all
up. We've got all these fringe Christian
groups.
He's
been arrested.
We should bring back the Shakers.
Attempting to leave the scene of a fatal shooting, charged with attempted murder. I mean, good grief. How many chances do you want to give this guy?
Yeah. Evidently 8 more once every Sunday.
Good God.
So backtracking, because I don't want to miss out on this. What she wrote was, "I don't want to live in a world where those with power impose their evil intent on the masses and not face any type of consequence. Without God, people can easily escape human justice. I can't buy into that." She also made this point about, you realize, because somebody mentioned pedophile priests, and she's like, you realize, yes, pedophiles are immoral, but there are pedophiles who escape from human justice, and therefore it's good to know that God's justice is eventually going to get them. And this becomes the basis of why she believes. And so here was my response, and I'll just read it. "The kind of world you want to live in has no bearing on what kind of world you do live in. If this is your principal objection to worldviews that don't include some cosmic justice in them, if you'll forgive the condescending remark, you really don't understand what you're talking about. Life isn't fair, and the desire for justice that you express is one of the key foundations of most every religion. We're all aware that sometimes good goes unrewarded and evil goes unpunished, and so some justice seekers invent a security blanket to ensure that they aren't mired in depression. It allows them to avoid facing the harshness of an indifferent reality. Whether it's heaven and hell or karma dictating infinite rebirths, it serves the same purpose. Some of us prefer to actually face reality. Some of us realize that there's no good reason to believe that the universe is anything other than indifferent to our existence and our perceptions of good and evil. Some of us realize that dealing with reality on reality's terms is the only way to make any real improvements in the situation. Life isn't fair, and that's actually comforting if you think about it. If life were fair, that would imply that you actually deserve the bad things that happen to you, and that those who benefit from evil deeds are similarly deserving. The realization that there's no reason to expect justice is what ensures that we take steps to impose justice. The realization that good isn't always rewarded is what drives us to reward it when we see it. The realization that evil isn't always punished is what drives us to work together as a cooperative society to deal with our problems collectively and individually in a way that encourages real change and that hopefully minimizes harmful actions. Realizing that justice isn't guaranteed allows us to appreciate it when it happens and work toward ensuring it on a more regular basis. Your particular God concept view of justice represents the height of irresponsibility and injustice. Your chosen religion has us born as reprobates, guilty before we've taken a single breath, responsible for things we've never done. It offers instant, undeserved forgiveness for the most horrible of crimes and punishes people whose only crime is disbelief forever. It advocates slavery, denigrates women, curses homosexuals, orders the stoning of unruly children, sanctions wars of exterminations, condones human sacrifices, and poisons every mind it touches. It includes only one unforgivable crime, disbelief. Is that just? This justice you so admire is no such thing. It is divine edict. It's arbitrary, capricious, and ultimately unjust and immoral. Yes, I realize that there are pedophiles out there who've escaped our flawed justice system. Do you realize that your system says that they're all eligible for an eternal paradise? How does that address your objection? Under the rules of Christianity, the pedophile who escapes justice here can also escape your ultimate justice. Under the rules of Christianity, he may live forever in paradise, while someone who spent their entire life doing good, helping others, and contributing in a generally positive way to the one and only life we're sure to get, ultimately is judged unworthy of that reward. Don't kid yourself. You haven't accepted a cosmic sense of justice that alleviates the problem. You've accepted one that you believe alleviates the problem for you. It is a selfish justification that shows no regard for real matters of justice. It is the height of arrogance and your desire to feel special because somebody up there thinks you're special. Well, according to the paradigm you advocate, he thinks anyone willing to worship him is special with no regard to justice or character. Go, read Romans. No one makes this point clearer than Paul. The law was established with full knowledge that no one would be able to fulfill it. It was established to demonstrate this inability and damn us further, and then a loophole was established to let some people through regardless of their standing with the law. Your religion has made you a slave. It has made you uncaring. It has made you support immorality and injustice while claiming that arbitrary edicts and loopholes count as either. It is a reprehensible lie that poisons the mind and prevents you from understanding reality. When the scales drop away from your eyes, as they have for many of us, we'll be here, and you'll realize that you're not alone and not to blame.
Ditto.
Wow.
I guess I'm getting a little tired of this. I really want, you know, I want there to be a God, because if not, then these bad people are getting away with it. Yeah, they're getting away with it. So why don't you work with the rest of us to help make sure that they don't, or that as few do as possible.
I really want not to have to pay my credit card debt.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't want to live in a world where I owe Visa $30,000.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to live in a world where I'm not constantly surrounded by, you know, naked women. where I don't have a big boombox following me everywhere playing Nina Simone's Feeling Good because that's my theme song. I don't want to live in a world that's not like that. I don't want to live in a world where I can't fly, where I can't kill people with my mind. Yeah. Hey, you know what world I really don't want to live in? The one where it's okay for parents to deny medical treatment to their children under the guise of it's my personal religious belief that if we have enough faith, she'll pull through. You fucked hard. Ugh.
Yep.
I mean, and yet these are the same people who are doing this. Darwinism leads to atheism, which leads to Nazism, which leads to the Holocaust. Ta-da, you're evil. Yeah, well, pull the other one.
Or rather, don't. We know what that one sounds like, too.
All right, so wow. That's like rant two or three or whatever.
Yes.
So mail? Or?
I'm running out of stories now. It's getting...
Do some mail. Do some...
All right.
Oh, wait, I have a blog to plug, because this guy asked me to plug it. Plug it twice.
Plug it.
It's actually not a blog. It's a group, and I haven't got all the details, and I've been incredibly busy, but... The web address is godispretend.com.
Oh, that's good.
So,
I've been there. I don't remember it, but I know that I've
there's a different linked one. To it. There's God Is Just Pretend, which is the same people who do Why Won't God Heal Amputees.
That's probably what I'm thinking of.
That's all part of the God Is Imaginary or God Isn't Real. This is somebody else who's putting together a group. I think it's in California, and please forgive me for getting all the facts wrong. There's just way too much on my plate. And by the way, somebody's sending me a free T-shirt.
Ooh.
I love it.
What'd you get?
If you go to jumptees.com, uh-huh. JUMPTEES, and you like look at the T-shirts there, there's one that has creationism and this nice, neat script, and then there's this wonderful, iconic representation of Adam and Eve and a velociraptor all holding hands.
Right.
And he sent me the link, and I said, I have to have one. It's perfect, because I can wear it around my atheist friends, and we'll all get a good laugh out of it. And if I ever go to the Creation Museum, they'll think I'm staff.
I'm very tempted to buy some shirts from that Nyctus website. It's this Christian teen paraphernalia, and it's trying really hard to be hip and cool, and it's just beautiful. Anyone should go to this site, Nyctus.com or org maybe, I don't know, but it's trying extremely hard to be hip, and so they have all these little intelligent design shirts, and
oh boy,
some of them, I don't know if they realize, seem to work better for the contrary position.
Charity.
Speaking of ambiguity in t-shirt designs, there's a little ambiguity in a video that we watched earlier. It's making all the rounds over, like crazy
all over recently. Yeah,
I'm sure somebody in the chat room will post a link for me so that I don't have to do the work, but. So one of you wonderful people in there, pull up the link to that new video from Dickie D. It's called Beware of the Believers or something like that.
You can find a link to it on Frangula.
Yeah, it's Phil Plate posted it about Astronomy Blog. I think Peasy's posted to it.
It's all over now.
And the question is this put out by creationist people in the expelled type community? As a sort of humorous take on their accusations against big science, or is it in fact a parody taking those creationist objections to big science and making them look as silly and stupid as possible?
Right.
I don't care which one it is, because I can look at it, even if some bunch of creationist nut jobs put together, I can say, holy cow, that's so insane. But it's well put together. It's funny.
It really is. Darwin is priceless.
My favorite, though. It's disturbing to see Eugenie Scott's face on that girl, but it's even, not more disturbing. The coolest of all of them is Dan Dennett. And Dan, if you're listening or you ever hear this, and if not, then I'll send you an email. You need one of those big pimp hats like they put on you in this video, and you need to wear it to every conference from now on, because that thing is fucking dope.
Well, should we go some listener mail?
Sure.
All right. John writes, in all seriousness, though, I'd like to throw out a topic for discussion on the show. How do you fend off hopelessness as an atheist? Now, I'm not talking about the standard hopelessness, that theists think we all have.
Right.
There is no God, therefore no hope. I'm talking about the hope that the world will somehow get over the God crap and become a better place. I used to have that hope, but the older I get, and the more life and death I see, and the more primitive superstitious ignorance I'm confronted with, the farther away that goal seems. It seems like the shitheads are winning. I'll go down fighting if I have to, but I'd prefer not to go down at all if I can avoid it. Do you have a beacon of hope you could light up for us?
I'm in the absolutely no hope camp there. Atheism has had several thousands of years. It's the single oldest worldview on religion. And if we haven't won yet, things aren't going to look up.
No, but you can look back on history and see that mankind muddles through somehow all the time. Now, it may be that our technology has taken us to a place where that may not continue to be the case, but if I look just at history and the things I know, then we have muddled through up till now.
Right. I mean,
it's likely to continue.
I don't think that the point should be to try to work towards a full-scale eradication of religion and a utopia of thinking or anything like that. It should be to make things as comfortable as possible for your position, to allow atheism an ability to thrive without persecution, to have societies where religion can be as ubiquitous as it would like and not be a problem.
Right.
So I think the goals should be a bit more or a bit less ambitious.
Mm-hmm. Oddly enough, and you didn't get to see my response, here's what I sent back, and I'll apologize for just reading my stuff today. Today must be the day where Matt reads his stuff on the show.
It would be handy.
Dennis is handing me my response. What I sent back was, I don't have any delusions about drastic changes in my lifetime, but I do see changes, small ones. I also think it's inevitable. Perhaps we're just the early adopters, but I sincerely believe that supernatural claims and beliefs will eventually be relegated to the extreme minority. How soon? I have no idea. I'd hate to even put a number on it, but it may be several centuries before non-believers become the majority. However, we've seen how quickly views can change as information increases, and we're increasing our understanding at a pretty good clip. I can understand the frustration, but consider this. Polls show that none is the fastest growing religious category. The number of people openly professing atheism has increased dramatically in just the past 10 years. Atheist books aren't just selling, they're selling well. There are tons of rationalist atheist podcasts, blogs, etc. Here's what I think honestly is going to happen. Religiosity will gradually wane, and then wax, and then wane, over and over. But the general trend is downward. You simply can't keep gaining understanding about reality and not have that be the ultimate result. I guess I don't, and I'll put in a caveat here for you Christians out there, or theists, whatever. The exception would be if we found definitive proof that a God exists. Yeah. Then, of course, the whole thing changes. I guess I don't feel hopeless because, and here's where Schilling and I hit the same point, I've set reasonable expectations. I have on occasion set some very optimistic expectations and found myself rather bummed out when it didn't happen. I guess I just got used to cautious optimism. I really do. I see it as kind of inevitable. And much the same, you know, if you look at the history of religion, like, we didn't have an explanation for lightning bolts, so Zeus serves as an explanation for lightning bolts until such time as we come up with an explanation for lightning bolts. Zeus wasn't made irrelevant just by that, and there was more to Zeus than just the lightning bolt thing. But eventually, the key elements were explained enough so that Zeus' belief has faded off into, I was going to say extinction, but a relative obscurity, because I have had people write and say, oh, no, I really still do believe in Zeus, and all right, I'll take him at the word.
I don't know that contributed to a drop in belief in Zeus so much as the political climate and
sure, there's tons of factors.
But even if
that wasn't the case, having a good scientific explanation for lightning and being able to control it, controlling electricity, would have put an end to Zeus belief.
Yeah. And it doesn't... I don't know. I think it would have shifted. The same way we have a lot of theists who accept evolution just simply think that it's the mechanism that God uses. You're always going to have gaps where God can fit, and you're always going to have the ability to throw in religion to explain the purpose or meaning of events that science can fully explain.
I think what I'm saying...
Religion will be more moderated, certainly. I don't think that religion will ever become minority as far as the population goes.
Oh, I do.
Now, also consider, it doesn't have to take a scientific understanding of something. I mean, slavery was abolished in this country. We even fought a war to make things better for everyone.
And that was because some people kind of gained enlightenment on the subject and propagated a meme to raise the consciousness of everybody else out there.
Yeah, and it wasn't the ones that were holding the slaves who were defending their holding of slaves with biblical
quotes. Well, I think it demonstrates the point I was trying to make, because the abolitionist movement was the way it spread so well and became so strong was through church.
Mm-hmm.
So you had religious people on both sides using the exact same book. So what happened is people realized there were ethical problems, they became more progressive, and they changed their interpretation of the belief to suit that rather than chuck out the belief, seeing that it was immoral. So I think that's really what's going to happen more likely than people dropping religion en masse or anything like that.
But we already know of, I mean, in the United States, it's 75, 80, 85, whatever percent religious, and the rest are non-religious. And in other countries, that percentage is even higher. It seems to me that as we shrink the gaps in our knowledge, and they're never, ever going to go away, there's always going to be the gap that you can plug God in. But when those gaps become so tiny and so dispersed, that you reach a point where most people are just going to say, oh, okay, yeah, they're going to come to the same conclusion that the non-religious have now. I think that is going to end up becoming a majority. I think it's actually inevitable. I don't see how you can go on continuing to have an understanding and broadening it. We know that this trend is towards non-religious, that eventually that they would have the majority. I may be wrong. I won't live to see it either way.
Right.
But that's what I'm thinking.
And then, you know, my position on it is I don't give a damn about people in general. I'm not having kids. So my entire goal is to make things as comfortable for myself as possible. And that's sort of what I'm after as far as promoting atheism.
And, you know, we've talked about it before, and you know, we're well aware of that tendency, but it can't be that simple. I mean, if your only goal was to make things as easy on you as possible, then it seems that advocating the complete abolition of religion would work best for you.
Not really. It's kind of complicated, but...
Is it because that's such an unreasonable goal that it can never be achieved, so you go for the goal that may actually be achievable?
There's that, and there's also... I get a great deal of entertainment out of the whole thing. If I could not ridicule theism, I don't know what I would do with myself. Probably a lot more whiskey and video games, but...
The views of any one person on the nonprofits does not necessarily represent the atheist community of Austin or any of the other nonprofits.
That sounded like the lyrics to some country westerns.
So when
more
the Christians
whiskey, when less the, atheism, it's
when the Christians come to say that atheism leads to just selfish, misanthropic,
oh, good
I hate everybody behavior, they'll hold chilling up, and that's why he and I are friends. Because I'll be standing right next to him and say, no, it doesn't.
Well, and also...
Necessary, but not sufficient.
I try to make the argument that it is that selfishness that has allowed progress. It's that people are looking out for their own best interest, and they see ways of forming societies that work out to their best interest by benefiting others. It's sort of like you ever... In selfish gene,
I'm with you,
Richard Dawkins.
It's all in self-interest.
What you're talking about is kind of a selfish utilitarianism when approaching morality,
right.
And I'm fine with that. However, I was thinking about this the other day. There may be an exception, and I may have found the exception to the exception. This will make more sense in a second. I was thinking about the claims by Christians of this huge sacrifice that Jesus made, which, of course, we all recognize. Was no sacrifice at all.
No.
If somebody comes to me and says, hey, if you let me torture you, you know, for an afternoon and kill you, then 2 days from now you get to be God forever. Okay.
Sign me up.
Pull out your tools. I mean,
what was the lifespan at the time? He didn't have too many years left.
Yeah.
Walking around with sand in his ass.
Get
it
to
wasn't
be God
exactly,
at the end of it. Whoa.
I mean, that's just straight up, hey, just looking out for myself. If you add to it that my death serves some bigger purpose for somebody else, cool. But that's not a sacrifice. That's like, you know the little lizards, when captured by the tail, their tail will pop off easily and they'll just regrow it. I don't consider that a sacrifice.
Right. As a matter of fact, the sacrifice that Jesus supposedly committed insults every real sacrifice that real human beings have made.
Yes, it does. It damn sure does. Because those people who go over and, let's say, fight in wars are going over and willingly putting their life in jeopardy to protect other people, knowing they're probably going to die so that somebody else can live and that their death is going to be permanent.
Right.
Although religion is often used as a, hey, you'll go on to glory.
But the atheist in the war, he doesn't have any sort of refuge.
So
I don't know. I have a hesitation to assign sacrifice to most actions. I think more often than not, they're assessing a risk, seeing what benefit they can get out, and accepting.
Well,
the
sure.
Risk
I'm not.
I'm not saying you can't go there.
I'm not talking altruism.
But they're still sacrifice. I mean, they're still risking sacrifice in their life.
Throw himself on a grenade and stuff.
Yeah,
you know,
throwing yourself on a grenade. You're not calculating what the odds are. You're jumping on a grenade, knowing you're going to die to save somebody else. And what I was thinking is this whole thing. This Jesus sacrifice is no sacrifice at all. It's absurd. And I was thinking, what would I actually be willing to sacrifice my life? You know, like if somebody said, we're going to put a gun to your head and kill you, and you will be dead, end of story, that's it. What would have to happen in order to justify that? And I got to think, you know, I was trying to think on the biggest scale, and I was like, if I had some guarantee that that them killing me would completely end famine and poverty around the planet forever. I'm not positive because I haven't been put in that situation, and it's absurd.
It's a tough situation.
But I'm pretty sure that I'd let him do it. And I got to thinking about why that is, because that, to me, would seem to be extremely altruistic. And the first thing was, well, then you'd have statues built to you, and you could die not only knowing you did something good, but that you'd remember. And I said, okay, so let's put an anonymous thing.
Let's
on
sweeten
here.
It and make
would
it
you,
anonymous.
Would you willingly let them shoot you anonymous? And I'm still thinking that I probably would. And the reason is that making anonymous doesn't get rid of the one thing, and the one thing is dying with the knowledge that your life has had meaning and has had value to other people,
made
and that
a
it
difference.
Has helped people. If, I mean, I could die of a heart attack before they ever even pulled the trigger, and my life would have X amount of meaning. I could live another 20 years and maybe not do as much good as I could do in that one fell swoop. And I'm never going to be put in the situation. I can't say, oh, for sure I'd do it. But I think I might.
There's also the once proposed with that situation, there's also avoidance of guilt or aftermath of making the decision to live, especially if it was known, because you'd be the dick who...
How would you be able to live with yourself having refused?
Yeah, I know I could. I could sleep at night, but...
well, but, I mean, actions like that often, you hear parents talk about that, and that makes sense. It makes complete sense from an evolutionary standpoint of protecting your offspring. That's that's your progeny going down the road there.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't make as much sense when you're talking about sacrificing yourself for others. But I think it actually does as well. I think that not only could you look at it from a utilitarian standpoint, but you could also look at it and see that even if it's just a byproduct, the willingness of an individual to sacrifice himself for the group under some circumstance is a positive thing that helps the group as a whole continue to propagate their change. Because sometimes the sacrifice of that one individual is the only reason that the rest of that group survived.
Right.
Natural selection selects against mutations. Those things which are detrimental to passing along your genes. Some things are indifferent. Some things are positive, and they're only positive in some situations, and they get passed along. And religion may be one of them. The propensity for people to seek answers and accept some of the most stupid answers that are non-answers just because it kind of eases this discomfort we have with not knowing.
Yeah.
That could have been, you know, I have no problem at all thinking that was an evolutionary trait as well.
Who knows?
We can already demonstrate why it's a good thing that people are born implicitly trusting those in positions of authority over them. I mean, that's simple. If you haven't figured that out, boys, you better not have any kids.
Well, let's see. Another piece of mail. Left Coast Atheist. Tells of a exchange at a press conference. Reporter 1, is there a big problem with pedophilia among priests? Diocese spokesperson, no. Reporter 2, where has this priest been for the last 2 years? Diocese spokesperson, he was at one of a series of hospitals the church maintains for the treatment of pedophile priests.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa.
This is from Phil, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Phil actually stopped by Happy Hour when he was in town a couple weeks ago, and we talked about this. And I think I quoted
what
this
a lovely exchange
on the AE TV show. Yeah.
No, not a problem.
We don't
have
any problem.
We just have a bunch of hospitals.
Yeah. God. Is Hollywood having a problem with drug-addicted celebrities? No. Where has so-and-so been for the last 2 years? Why? She's in one of a number of hospitals that we keep for just this occasion. Oh, no problem at all. I drink, I get drunk, I fall down. No problem.
No problem.
More mail. You got like 15 minutes.
Yeah. Wow. How am I going to fill this? All right.
You've got a whole stack of stuff.
Yeah, there. I do. But the problem is I got to go through it fast enough to know what to read and what not to read. Let's see here.
Put Schilling to work. It's good for all of us.
Yeah. Here's a huge stack of paper. In the middle of the frickin' table. If anybody can make any sense out of that, go for it. I'm not going to use a name here.
Good.
But a person writes, talking about their mom and how they relate to her via their atheism. And he says... In any case, after the initial formalities of pointing out the problems with religious thought, I should point out that while my parents would call themselves Catholic, being Irish, their practices and general philosophies would more accurately be described as deistic. My mother stated, as a matter of fact, that all atheists are attention seekers. While I made it clear that not only myself but many of the other atheists who I know do not use it as an attention-seeking device whatsoever, she continued on this line. In essence, her point was that simply clarifying one's position as atheistic is to play devil's advocate, no pun intended, and this left me with a problem. Should I say anything from an atheistic perspective as an atheist in her eyes? I would simply be trying to commandeer the conversation and seek attention as a matter of ego. Yet, should I say nothing, I am left with a one-way conversation, which by definition is not a conversation. While it is clear that her view is a plain damned-if-you-do, damned-if-you-don't case, so to speak, I am finding it difficult to find an effective way to make this clear to her. And I responded to this, saying, well, if you were to derail a conversation about cars by blurting out, I'm an atheist, then, yeah, she's right, and that I can see the problem, but I seriously doubt you do that, and I don't think he does. Some theists try to trivialize atheism by describing it as nothing more than youthful rebellion, or as an immature attention-seeking phase that will pass. I hope that's not the argument your mother is trying to make. From your description, it sounds more like she's treating it as something akin to a logical fallacy, even though it's not. Or perhaps she sees mention of atheism as being lectured to, and this is her method of avoiding what she sees as a lecture.
You know what I think she's doing?
Well, he's replied to this.
Has he?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And unfortunately... He says, I do get the impression that it's the rebellious phase argument that she's putting forward, though she obviously doesn't see it as a teenage thing. So
I think
darn.
She's using the rebellious phase argument, but it's an actual excuse for what she really tries to say.
Uh-huh.
Because when you say that something is nothing more than somebody seeking attention, that's just a slightly less polite way of saying that atheists just need to shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
You're just looking for attention. I'm not interested in that. I have no interest in what you have to say. I don't think you're legitimate.
Right. Talk to the hand.
You know, yeah. It really is. I mean, think
about
it.
It's a shame.
At what point, you know, when do you tell somebody, oh, you're just looking for attention? You say that to a little kid.
Right. When they're
acting out.
Yeah.
And you decide you're not going to give them that attention. Oh, how much more condescending can you possibly be?
Indeed. When,
there are several problems with it. Among them, in many cases, there's the bias that the ones they're seeing and the ones they're thinking of are the ones getting attention. So there's mm-hmm. that initial bias. But then beyond that, very often, yes, they are looking for attention. They're trying to bring attention to some serious fucking issues.
Yeah.
There's no problem with looking for attention where it's warranted.
Yeah.
If it's to fulfill some sort of self-gratification, then sure, you're an ass. But
if you've got me locked up in your basement and I yell for help, yes, I'm seeking attention, but I have a good reason for it.
Yep.
So I really like this email.
Yeah?
See, I'm not sure if he wants us to use his name, but he's a fellow from London.
Okay.
I don't do accents, by the way. So his dare's anymore. Void.
We've all given up the accents.
Yeah. See, he's talking about his girlfriend who doesn't entirely accept evolution. They watch some Way of the Master, and after seeing Ray Comfort go on for a while, a few arguments in particular, she denounced the title of Catholic. And he says it's a step in the right direction. All we need now is Ray to do a show on abortion, and she'll be sold on atheism, I think. I want to point out that abortion is entirely irrelevant to theism. Religion may oppose abortion, and it may do a good job. Well, you can be atheist and against abortion.
Theism kind of makes it relevant.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's
it forces the issue.
So what I would recommend to him is to point out that you can be against abortion and an atheist.
Sure.
There's no distinction there. And what he should try to do is not to tie atheism in with sort of this liberal baggage.
Right.
Which might be a great position, but don't tie those two together and make it societal Christianity versus societal atheism.
Yeah.
Attack it at legitimate points. Understand exactly why she's still hanging on and try to help facilitate those needs without the bejesus and all.
See, yeah. I agree 100%, but I think the problem here is that her justification for being opposed to abortion is the same as most every other Christian's, which is they think that the Bible is opposed to abortion, which is actually false. I mean, you could...
Right.
The Bible says,
you can make a case the Bible is actually for abortion, possibly. But the other thing is, they have this sanctity of life and the idea of a soul and all this... their position isn't based on reason or evidence. They haven't come up with – it's not even based on raw emotion. I mean, I'm fine with somebody who says, I don't believe in any God, but I like babies. I like life. I can't tell the difference between a nine-month fetus and an 8.8-month fetus, and we trace it back, and I'm not comfortable drawing any line, so I'm therefore opposed to abortion. I could get in a big argument with them about why I object, but as long as – they're expressing it as their own view for what's right for them and not necessarily what should be legal. Cool. I'm fine. We could be best friends.
Yeah.
Hell, that woman that called into the show last week that somebody thought I was bullying, she and I could probably be best friends or, well, good friends. I already have enough, best friends. But, yeah, you're right. These issues aren't tied in any way to the atheism.
Right, and there are ways that I'm largely a liberal and an atheist, but I really dislike the way the two seem tied together. To even amongst atheists, there's this presumption that everyone's liberal. And in the U.S., that, oh, you're an atheist, so you're voting for Obama or for Hillary. They automatically assume a lot of other positions to go along with that. And with abortion, I can't see a legitimate reason to be opposed to it, but I can see reasons to be opposed to analogous actions, not wanting to – thinking that it's bad to start something that you're not going to finish, for example. There are a lot of situations
– I'm anti-abortion because nobody likes a quitter.
Well, to a certain – just disliking the irresponsibility that might come with – and it's not always the irresponsibility. But
that just jumped into my head. I have friends within the atheist community who are supporting McCain. I obviously disagree. I'm supporting somebody else. I think they're completely wrong to do so, but that's because I value certain issues higher than others. And, when you've got a candidate who... Well, I'm not going to go into that in detail.
And also, if you separate the atheism from the position on abortion and you approach it through her actual positions on abortion, if you get her to lose the God thing, then even if she still opposes it, she'll begin to be able to oppose it in a more reasonable fashion.
Right.
She'll be able to articulate her position and not just defer to the magical authority.
Yeah.
And this has come up over and over again on our shows with regard to, like, the gay marriage issue. And I keep saying, well, okay, basically we're talking about denying somebody a right that we're allowing somebody else. And I think that I'm under the opinion that in order to deny somebody a right, you have to have good secular justification for it. So what is it? And the only one that anybody's been able to come up with that's secular is actually an argument against marriage on the whole, that the government right. should not be in the business of sanctioning marriage. And therefore, by allowing homosexuals to marry, we're perpetuating a system that they object with. And I understand that. That's a valid secular reason to oppose gay marriage. I just think it's horse shit because unless you're actively acting to remove marriage from everybody, then you kind of got to – you're part of the discrimination.
I don't know. I would disagree there just because there's the whole thing of why make a bad situation worse. If you can't help the bad situation, you could still stop it from getting worse. And I don't think – I think we should work towards getting government to stay out of marriage altogether. But it's a fruitless goal, and there are many other things you could pursue that actually have a chance of making headway.
I'm not convinced that even if you buy into all the presuppositions with that argument, that you're actually making a bad situation worse. It may be the case that the best way to get the government out of marriage altogether is go ahead and allow all the gay folks to marry,
right?
Piss off all the other folks and say, no, we want this out of the hands of the government, back in the church, and then congratulations, you've met your goal. So yeah. I'm not convinced that that's necessary, but, you know, that's a huge discussion. We got like 3 or 4 minutes left.
It's not necessarily, it could be from an economic perspective, because that's one of the reasons sure. I disagree with marriage. And economically, it does make it worse. I mean, it could eventually make it better. But
no, because most of them are getting the same benefits and rights. It's just a matter of labeling right now. And you could do the exact same thing with a contract. You could make yourself a couple that is a corporation mm-hmm. that has all those same financial benefits.
Hmm.
You may not be, not necessarily all of them.
Because I'm talking
there
like the marriage break more than
special for marriage,
insurance needs and things like that.
But anyway, we can't possibly go down that road with a minute and 2 minutes left, you know, whatever. So,
huh.
Is there any last listener mail news item?
Not that we've identified.
There's right. a complaint that we're not using ass hat enough.
Oh,
but
I don't care what those assets think about us.
Well, you can only use a word for so long and have something built around it before. Anytime you're using the word,
yeah.
it's not when you can't judge when the word's appropriate. You're just sort of playing into it.
Right. It's not spontaneous anymore.
Hey, if you really were using it as a drinking game, go ahead. Drink anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, you know. Pick a new word.
You can replace it with cunt gristle, which is my favorite
yeah.
word.
Yeah.
What?
It's a single word hyphenated. Cunt gristle.
Yeah, it's it's on. It's,
ouch! It sounds painful.
It's
on the list of
most visceral profanity that I've ever been able to yeah. think of.
It's on the list That's of words point. That I'd prefer that we didn't use on the show, even though they yes. don't actually offend me.
Right.
No, but there was one news item, and we didn't really talk about this on the end of the shows, and I'll hit it real quick before we close out. In Texas, they passed a law. It says anytime you walk into a strip club in Texas, you have to pay a $5 fee.
Really?
They passed
Why?
It only for strip clubs.
Weird.
I mean, it is a fine.
What is their rationale for that?
Hey, we want to produce some money for health care for the poor and for battered women shelters. So why don't we go after strip clubs since
the
people
did,
who are putting this together already view them as part of the problem?
They did mention discouraging vice
uh-huh.
and they also not in the bill itself but in the speeches promoting it, because a lot of it goes to battered women shelter and rape victims, they were trying to promote this line that strip clubs contribute to violence against women.
Right. Would they refer to this as a tax?
No, I don't know how it was
actually.
I know
they've piled taxes on top of cigarettes.
So anyway, a district judge in Austin on Friday tossed out the $5 per customer strip club fee. There are more than 150 strip clubs across the state. Many of them are members of the Texas Entertainment Association, whose lawyers fought the fee. They called it a sin tax or a poll tax that unfairly targeted exotic dance clubs. And guess what? They were exactly frickin' right. What type of club? Maybe I went in to watch sports TV, and I got a choice between Hooters, which
They're not going to take their clothes off, or the yellow rose, where they're going to get completely naked. I've been to strip clubs. Mm-hmm. I've seen plenty of guys go in there, eat a steak because it's cheaper there because they want you to spend money, and watch sports on TV. And I've also seen guys get lap dances, and that you can't get at Hooters. But regardless, you're saying that this particular activity, which is legal, is something that should be taxed special.
Right.
And if you're going to say that about anything, you need a justification.
Rationale? Yeah.
And they don't provide one. They just pick on this one. So this judge tossed it out, and, of course, the news people are commenting, about how the fee was expected to raise $40 million a year. Half of the funds would have gone to health care for the poor and the other half to sexual assault and abuse services. Representatives for those groups said they were disappointed by Friday's decision. Quote, "We've been planning for this as a contingency, and we certainly have plans in place, either if the state chooses to appeal that decision or for us to return to the legislature's next session and try to find some sustainable long-term funding source for sexual assault services. Congratulations, that's a good plan. Go back to the legislature, make your case that you're trying to raise funds for something that's important, and see if there's some way to do it without punishing people you don't agree with."
Mm-hmm.
It would have been so much better if they'd have got together with this Texas Entertainment Association, this Association of Strip Clubs, and said, "Hey, we'd really like to raise money. Is there any way you can help us?" I bet some of them would have donated. I bet some of them would have allowed them to put boxes in there saying, "Hey, we got all kinds of guys coming in here." You could even have a special one dance a night where the guys, the girls run around, they flash their tits at you, and you give them dollars, and all the dollars from that one dance go directly towards this fund. All of those things you could have done and protect the freedom and rights of individuals and businesses. And instead, you chose to do something which tramples on those rights. So fuck you. I'm glad the judge threw this out. He threw it out as a violation of the First Amendment, saying that, stripping is right. Free expression.
Which, now that I think about it more, I absolutely agree with that premise for throwing it out.
Yeah, I think it's probably the best case on there. But the thing is, we already taxed the hell out of all kinds of different vices. I mean, cigarette taxes and alcohol taxes and all this stuff. We've gotten to the point where we just kind of put up with it, where, these are the things that proper society looks down upon, so it's okay for us to tax the shit out of them. But, God forbid that we actually tax my golf club. Why didn't you go to the golf courses? Hey, every time you get a tee time, you got to pay a $10 fine fee, it doesn't make any difference to me, in order to support this money that we want. Somehow or another, somebody made a decision that golf clubs would not be the target, and strip clubs would. Give me one good justification.
I wonder what basis that could be based on. Some puritanical bullshit?
It's ignorant nonsense. Yeah. And we were, if it went for this judge throwing it out, we were planning to put together a protest.
It was really great.
With a whole bunch of topless women at the steps of the Capitol.
Excellent.
We're looking in. Somebody had said that Austin, or at least Travis County, a part of it, didn't have any laws against toplessness. Right. Is that true?
Apparently so.
I'm going to have to
double check. Even if not, pasties.
Check, but yeah.
That would have been a hell of an event. Just invite all the Texas strip clubs to send a representative down.
They say as long as you're not, causing traffic accidents. Yeah.
Oh, I'm pretty sure if we line them all up there on 11th, the corner of 11th in Congress, and they're all sitting out there. Yeah. But so that was the last thing there.
That sounds good.
And you know what's funny is I've actually been in a strip club only one time since I stopped being a Christian.
Uh-huh. Wow.
So for those of you who think that I've turned to a life of debauchery, that's just not true.
Yeah.
I spent way more money in strip clubs.
I've been an atheist all my life. I'm 51. I've been in a strip club once.
Hey, you want to go this
weekend?
That
was to be a as a result of a birthday party.
And
boy,
the once for me
surreal.
Was the once
was
for me
surreal.
Was a birthday party. I loved it.
But
I don't have the money for
that. It's becoming a nice sexual climate in Texas because now you can own your sixth dildo.
Yes.
Yeah. You can actually own a dildo, not a personal massager or instructional device.
All five of your personal massaging devices became dildos and got friends just the last month.
But to me, strip clubs don't make much sense. Gee, where can I go to be really frustrated? I know.
There's some things you're not aware of, but I'll fill you in.
Okay. Yeah, please, let me know.
Anyway, that's the end.
That's the end, yes.
That's the end.
Well, as we know, reality is intrinsically unattainable, says Lube. However, according to Dillahunty, the nonprofits will be back in 2 weeks. And as Schilling observes in his essay, Glasser Speaks, Socialism, Rationalism, and Constructive Dematerialism, we depart from the common subcultural genre with Terrible Lie by Nine Inch Nails.
Really?